shows.
America's game. Eric Vanny. America's game. South Harmony. South America's game. This is America's game. Now, South Harmony's everything to change. That Warp Tour made you open your brain. Eric Vanek is here, so remember the name. He got the waiver wire for the week. Tell you who to start and who to give a seat. Dropping the podcast every week. You know the knowledge is elite. After the show, we gon' hold a Lombardi. Celebrating like we throwing a party. This the blueprint and I know they gon' copy. South Harmony intros always go the hardest. Cause this is America's game.
Hey everybody, welcome back into America's Game, episode number 116. I'm your host, Eric Vanek, at Eric Vanek NFL. You can find me on X. And we are back from a little hiatus from last week. Had some scheduling conflicts from last week. But we are back this week. And this week I got my man, Matty Kiwoom, on here. Matty, what's going on?
What's up, brother? Very excited to be on America's Game. We've always chatted up for quite a bit of time, so very excited. I'm prepared and ready to go. And I'm also... I got some questions ready for you because you got your ranks. I got some questions about it.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to get into some dynasty ranks today, like some updates that I have done to them recently over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I've been updating them in the Discord. So if you want to join me live, I usually go live on Fridays for like a half hour to an hour, how many ever people show up. I've been doing it the last couple weeks. Patreon.com/South Harmon. You know, come join the $8 tier is where you get access to that, to our rankings. All of our rankings are on there for Dynasty. And I think it's important right now, too, because it's halfway through the season, just about, at least the fantasy season. And people are going to start doing, mid-season fantasy drafts. There's some, I've been in a couple where you start the draft in the middle of the season, draft from there, you play out the rest of the season, and then... You start next year, sometimes picks are included in the draft and all that kind of stuff. So there's a few of those midseason drafts that do pop around. I haven't seen them start yet, but this is usually about the time that they do start. So I wanted to update those for anybody that's going to participate in those leagues. You can use my ranks or any of the guys on the South Harmon ranks and use those for your leagues. So excited to get into that and been updating those. But yeah, Matty, how have you felt the football season has gone the last couple weeks that we haven't been on here?
So it feels like throughout this first half, let's just call it, kind of like you said, talk about the whole first half. I've started to change my tune in terms of running back health, how you can depend on it in Dynasty, because it wasn't that long ago, Eric, where they were one-year mercenaries. It was, I will trade for my backs when I'm a contender, and I'll pay the king's ransom to bring on a game changer, but I'm not going to build around running backs. And throughout my Dynasty leagues, man, it's like I keep looking at the teams at the top, and I'm seeing, man, how the hell did he get JT and Gibbs? Well, he drafted Gibbs and didn't trade. He didn't sell low and get rid of Jonathan Taylor when things were bad. And now all of a sudden these teams are emerging and Christian McCaffrey looks fantastic. The smaller backs, the guys like James Cook, Devon Achane, they're having success. They're being dependable. So I'm just starting to change my tune on the running backs in terms of how I go about building my teams here. But yeah, that's something that's definitely stuck out to me in this first half. Like, these running backs seem to be a little bit more dependable. Now I'm knocking on every single piece of wood I have in my office right now because I don't want to bring that evil upon us like Ricky Bobby. Do it to me, Ricky Bobby. But it does seem a little bit more like I can game plan around these backs over the short and long term and not just look to overpay in the moment when I'm contending.
Yeah, I think there's a few different factors that come to my mind when you brought that up. So the first one that popped into my mind is, man, wide receivers get hurt a lot the last 2 years too, like these hamstring injuries and all these things. Like, last week, good example, you had Garrett Wilson out, McLaurin out, Debo out, Calvin Ridley out, Chris Godwin out. Like, there's just all these receivers, and I had a combination of like three or even four of these guys on some of my teams. And then Nico, he gets a concussion on Monday Night Football. Mike Evans breaks his collarbone. Like, it just seems like, you know, we always thought, oh man, all the running backs always get hurt, and it used to kind of be that way for a couple years there. And the wide receivers were pretty healthy during like the Julio Jones days and stuff. It seemed like those guys were always healthy. And then now it's like kind of flip-flopped that the wide receivers are always freaking hurt, and the running backs last year and this year have been relatively healthy. So that was my first thought. My second thought is, I think the NFL, you know, I've heard, you know, people predict this a couple years ago, that with all this too high stuff that every team seems to run to kind of combat Mahomes the way he was playing, now everyone runs this too high stuff, that the running game was going to come back into, you know, full effect here, and it has the last couple of years. Like, teams are running the ball a lot more. It's a lot more important for them. Offensive lines too, I think, have a lot to do with it. Like, the Colts offensive line is just fucking mauling people right now. Shout out to Dynasty Barry. He posted a 15-minute YouTube clip of a guy going through all the Colts offensive plays and their schemes and stuff the other day, and I found it really good. Like, Shane Steichen is really calling some really good plays right now. You have some great play callers in this league, and you also have some goddamn shitty ones too, but we'll get to that later. And then I think a lot of it too is like, yeah, there's some really good quarterbacks in this league too. But there's some really fucking bad ones too. Like, And I think that affects just everything, run game, pass game too. So yeah, there's only like, you know, there's a lot of good running backs, but like, you got to have two or three of them. Like, if you only just have one, man, it's kind of hard. Like, there was, you know, a couple leagues last week, I'm deciding between, you know, do I start Woody Marks, Breshard Smith, Kendre Miller, you know, all these guys, not to mention the Patriots, but Travion Henderson, how many of my prop bets he's fucked the last couple weeks? Like, I had him a lock for like 40 rushing yards against Tennessee. He's got this. He gets 5 rushing yards. I'm like, what are we doing?
In the season two, we thought he was going to get 40 in two carries. Like, we were okay. You know, whether it be me as a New England Patriots fan or us as a fantasy, you know, analyst and all that stuff, we were expecting him to maybe get the 45-47% of the lion's share. We were okay with it. We're like, it worked with him and Quinshon. Maybe this is the type of guy where less is more, and the less has gotten more. It's gotten more and more, and it's becoming very concerning for Travion.
Yeah, I mean, Ramondre had the hot hand last week, and that's kind of what Vrabel said. He's like, and he was running the ball really good. We just kept giving it to him. He didn't make any mistakes or anything, and he just got the ball. So Travion is the one who had to kind of sit for it, which kind of sucks. Travion just hasn't had any of those explosive plays either that we fully expected him to have, you know, being a 4-3 guy, basically, and all that. And just hasn't happened yet, but yeah, there's just multiple factors about these running backs right now that are, you know, running really good. I think a lot of offenses are running everything through their backs right now. So yeah, it's a good time to be a running back again.
Make running backs great again.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I can't wait. Let this wait any longer. We're almost, you know, 10 minutes into this, Ian. It's been chapping my ass since I saw your rankings. So we're talking rankings here. We're talking about the update in Dynasty. And it's not an argument, because I don't think your ranking of him is too low. I think when you look at the guys ahead of him, the arguments are there. But I think if we have a discussion here, it'll help my brain settle in Jackson Smith and Jigba, because you have him at wide receiver 8 in Dynasty. Mm-hmm. And again, you look at the names ahead of him, and of course he's in these conversations. So I want to ask you, though, is he really a tier below the tier? Is he in tier two for you? Like, solidly? It looks like it on your rankings. And I just wonder if, I guess the question I'm going to ask the stars, isn't he, he's got to be in tier one at this point.
I think he's right on the cusp of it. I just trust Chase, Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, and Puka as, like, I know every week those guys are getting 100 yards. Now, JSN has been doing that this year for sure. I think I just probably need to see, you know, him continue to do it throughout the season. You know, guys I've seen do it year after year after year. This is JSN's really his first time doing it. And I could probably move him up a few spots. Like, I still have Neighbors above him. You know, I could probably flip-flop that in a dynasty league right now and feel okay about it. Ibuka has been fantastic as well, so I have Ibuka mm-hmm. above him. Amon-Ra, I mean, I could debate putting Amon-Ra on that first tier, too. That guy's just done it year after year after year, and he continues to do it, no matter if we say, oh, the Lions' offense is going to take a step back or whatnot. So, I mean, I have him at 8. I could probably, you know, be okay putting him at 6. Or 5th, you know, maybe ahead of Amon-Ra. But, I mean, Amon-Ra's just done it every single year, too. So I think if I change it right now, I'd probably move him up to 6th instead of 8th.
Okay. It's funny. I'm hearing you talking. I completely agree. It feels like maybe there's 8 guys in Tier 1.
Yeah, they definitely could be, for
we,
sure.
We could absolutely just say that. Because the thing about, you know, as we look at these players, and we're talking about JSN, we're talking about the receivers and how it kind of tears out. It feels to me like JSN, he's found his, you know, if he's Antonio Brown, he's found his Ben Roethlisberger. Sam Darnold now is, the way he goes to JSN, 4th-and-1 on a, like, 19-yard route, like, he looks to me like Antonio Brown, where no matter what, this is the Seahawks fastball, and you got to catch up to it. We don't care who you put on JSN. You could put on Stingley. You could put on 2 guys. It doesn't matter. He's going to get open. So with Darnold being locked and loaded, I'm comfortable having him in that tier one, because I don't know if I could say that about Jefferson. I mean, at this point in time, we don't know if Jefferson has found his counterpart, his battery mate, his quarterback that's going to get him the ball through thick and thin. He's been good, but he hasn't been the world beater. Like, Ja'Marr Chase won weeks last week. CeeDee Lamb, after coming back from injury, he right back over 100 yards on a tutty. JSN, last week in my home league, I scored 120-ish points, which is a, you know, on the low end. Like, this week's high scores was 190, 180, 170. So it's, you know, your standard kind of PPR league. I didn't have a single player in double digits other than these two, CMC and JSN, the three-letter guys. And I won the week because of those two guys. So JSN has been carrying teams. Neighbors in week two, you know, that week against Dallas, carried teams. Ibuka, same thing. So these are the guys overall. I would agree with you, but I'm starting to think maybe it's a tier of 8, because then you get Drake London, Nico Collins, Rome, Brian Thomas. That definitely seems like a tiered break for me. So I guess I'm just threading hairs. We're kind of just hashing it out here, but the wide receivers at the top have been pretty damn good, and JSN has been fantastic. So having, for me, I think he's just graduated into that tier 1, but again, the argument can be made for 7 or maybe even all 8 of these guys being in a tier of 1 type caliber.
Yeah, that's kind of one thing. It's hard to do tier sometimes. It's like, where exactly do I put this guy in this tier, and where do I put this guy in this tier, all that stuff. So, yeah, the tiers could be a little, you know, wonky sometimes, but, like, there's no doubt, like, as long as everybody's healthy next year, Chase, Jefferson, Lamb, Puka, Amon-Ra, JSN, Ibuka, I bet you all 7 of those guys are first round picks next year in dynasty leagues, or even your redraft leagues. Like, they're probably going to be up there for sure.
Yeah, the first round of, you know, dynasty startups start, you know, they start kind of, the sickos do a couple right now, right before we get to the second half. We get the second half dynasty startups, dynasty drafts. I agree. I think the 7 in the top go in the top 14, so maybe not all first round picks, because Bijan, CMC, CMC might be with the age, but Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan, even Jonathan Taylor, they're going to be those type of round one players. And we're talking, obviously, one QB in Superflex. We'd have to add half dozen quarterbacks. But yeah, the receivers at the top have been sick. Are you surprised at all by Ibuka in his rookie year? How good it's been. I mean, I think Saltarmer, we were pretty high on Ibuka, you know, talking through you, you know, talking to you, talking to DB, Mike and Adam, talking to the rookie status last year. We all liked Ibuka, but for him to be a top 8 dynasty receiver out of get-go, I don't know if even I really saw that coming. Are you shocked by this, E?
I wouldn't say shocked. I'd definitely say surprised. I think he's had the perfect storm of everything happen for him this year. Like, Mike Evans got hurt early. Yeah. Chris Godwin didn't come back right away. So, like, the perfect storm of those two being injured and not being ready right away put Ibuka in this situation. And he has just smashed the button. He's, you know, smashed the pedal to the floor. And he's you know, they're probably their best wide receiver going forward. Like, Evans broke his collarbone. He's done for the year. Godwin is still really slow coming back from this ankle injury. He's going to be 30. So, like, I'm very comfortable putting Abuka as their number one wide receiver going forward. And that's why they drafted him. Like, they were smart enough to, like, say, you know, even though this is a strength of our team, like, this kid's too good to pass up. And that's proven right. So, I'm excited about what he's done so far. Like you said, a little surprised that he has done this, but it's the perfect storm that's happened for him.
Yeah. No, sometimes you just hit a home run with landing spot. And then, like you said, sometimes after the landing spot's a home run, you can just keep going because it's the injuries, and they're not healthy to this minute that we're talking. Godwin and Evans are still not healthy. And then McMillan got hurt, and it's just, I mean, we've gotten to the point now where we're excited about Sterling Shepard and Tez Johnson. So, of course, you know, that's a massive volume to share going Egbuka's way.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I definitely made the mistake of, you know, I just thought, okay, Evans is going to be healthy. Godwin's going to be healthy. Abuka's going to be a little bit lesser, you know, to start his first year. So I'm going to value a guy like Golden, who I think is going to be way above him, or, you know, Tet McMillan, obviously, Travis Hunter we had above him. You know, some people took the tight ends above Abuka, obviously all these running backs too. So like Abuka fell to like the end of the first around that range anyways. And, you know, it just happened, like a playoff team basically got Abuka in your league and is helping them out even more. So I think you kind of have to like ignore the situation sometimes on that. Like things can definitely happen, but he had a really good situation he was stepping into with a really good offense, a really good quarterback in Baker Mayfield, and he continues to just kill it, man.
Yeah, he's been awesome.
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead. We'll dive into each position here. Like I said before, patreon.com/SouthHarmon. If you join the $8 tier, I think it's the pregame pooper tier, that gets you access in our Discord, and then you go to that Discord channel and go to the pinned topics, and the rankings will be in there. You can have access to the Google Sheet to look at it. So we'll go into the quarterbacks first, and I'll just kind of talk about I'll give away my top give away my first two tiers here, top eight. So I still have Josh Allen number one, Lamar Jackson. I think I had Lamar at two or at one to start the year, and I had Allen at two, but Allen's playing better right now, so I'm going to give it to Allen. Lamar at two, Jaden Daniels I still have at three. Four, I've moved up Justin Herbert to quarterback four for me. I moved him ahead of, obviously, Burrow, who's been hurt, and Jalen Hurts, who has just been inconsistent, and he's always been inconsistent, and I just kind of trusted his rushing and all that a little bit more, but, like, it's not like he's running for 800, 1,000 yards anymore, you know? So it's not like he's doing that, so I put Herbert up at four the way that he started off the year and continues to play. I felt like he was four for me. Fifth, I have Joe Burrow still. I think in a dynasty startup like next year, I'd probably still take Burrow over Hurts. Like I trust Burrow a little bit more throwing the ball. He's got Chase and Higgins and all that. Like it's not like he has a torn ACL or anything like that. Like it's, you know, it's a freak injury with the toe stuff. So I'm not too worried about that. Jalen Hurts, I do have at six still. I you know, obviously his rushing, his passing has gotten, you know, last week against Minnesota, he was awesome. Like, they finally let him throw the ball and rip it and all that, and it was great. But I need to see it every single week, man. Like, I can't have these 120 passing yards and maybe a touchdown and a rush touchdown games. Like, those just kill you sometimes, you know? And just his inconsistency throwing the ball, he shouldn't have that. Drake May, I have at seven. Feel pretty comfortable putting Drake May there the way that he's been playing. He's been awesome this year. And I have Mahomes at eight. You could probably argue Mahomes could probably be up a couple more spots too. But, yeah, that's my top eight right now, my first two tiers.
Yeah, it feels pretty good in terms of just the way these guys played, how you kind of see their outlook even beyond just this year. Mahomes keeps this up. Is the argument that he's back in the top five? Because, you know, I know he's 30. He's older than the rest of these. But, I mean, Burrow is almost, he's going to be 29 next year, and he deals with a shitload of injuries. So there are factors, you know, that I think mitigate the severity of the age for Mahomes, because I think we all expect at least three more years of high-level play. the rushing is what's really been surprising. So
yes,
you know, having him at eight makes a ton of sense. You know, inside the top eight, inside the top 10 safely, that feels right. The rushing though is that gonna be year to year predictable? Because surely they're going to be a better. They're gonna have to get a better. They'll by default have better running backs next year. If they just draft or whatever, right? I would have to imagine that this is a one-year blip of the rushing, or is this part of the game? Because this is what makes the offense go.
Yeah, as far as your question, can this be consistent? I have no idea. This is his first year doing that, really. So right. It could just be a one-year blip, or it could be something going forward. I would probably say it's a one-year blip because, you know, running or quarterbacks that rush, like, they just go down in yards each year. You know, look at Russell Wilson, look at Dak Prescott. Like, those guys used to be 500, 600 yard rushing quarterbacks, and now they're, you know, maybe 100, 200 yards at the most. Like, that has come down a lot. Kyler Murray, same thing. He's come down quite a bit. So, like, he's not up here with, like, Jaden Daniels and Lamar running for 800 yards a year or anything like that anymore. So that tends to come down as they get older in age. But Mahomes just has this one-year crazy blip. And I think a lot of it does have to do with their shitty running game. But they're starting to get it going a little bit better. But I think they probably need, you know, a better running back. Like, if one of these elite running backs becomes available or something, like, I think they should maybe go and get it. Or do they use the end of their first round pick on a Jeremiah Love? Like, you know, they don't need too many options here, but I think the passing game is starting to get going, like with Rashee Rice in there, Worthy starting to get healthy. I think a lot of people, especially me, when I did the quarterback rank, so I did these like 3 or 4 weeks ago, with Mahomes, like, he wasn't playing as good as he is now. Like, things change in 3 weeks a lot. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting to see what Mahomes has been doing this year, too, man, with the rushing.
I also think what's been a big factor in his rushing, which could help us in terms of trying to predict it going forward, was how bad the team was in the win-loss column. Because historically, we've seen that, you know, the biggest of games, Mahomes runs. I mean, every single Super Bowl, then we're like reminded, damn, Mahomes can scoop for 15. He can take advantage of those 7-8 yards when needed. And he's been very conservative in doing that in the regular season because they've been able to win without needing it. So I think maybe this year we could kind of keep an eye on that. In these games that they need to win, he needs to do what he needs to do to get the win. He didn't have to in the years past. So maybe next year we look at the schedule, we look at the strength of the schedule. Maybe if there is a Kelce retirement or an injury, and we're like, oh, they're not going to be as good in the win-loss column. Maybe we can bet on a guy like Mahomes to scamper around. Because the offense is, it hums when the ball can be progressed in the run game. And this year it hasn't come from the backs. They have been as easy of a running back tandem to tackle. You know, the way they run, they're just, you know, ever since the injury, Pacheco's not the same. Hunt's, you know, a shell of his former self. So it's just been super easy for defenses to make tackles on those running backs. But Mahomes has been able to open it up with his legs. So I like the Mahomes thing. I would also say, too, the Drake May, the hype on Drake May is outrageous all across the world. I'm in Boston. Yeah. And even up here, it's like, whoa. I'm excited for it. But I like your rankings here because I do wonder how often the rushing's been there for him this year. But he got his bell rung last week. They don't want him running the ball and taking these hits because he's not good at you know, mitigating damage at this point in his career. But I think even with those limitations, we've seen that the arm's lively. The offense has been very good with Josh McDaniels, and they're letting him play. You know, they're kind of unleashing him in the way that the Buffalo Bills unleash Allen, the way the Chargers unleash Herbert. So having him inside the top eight feels good. I did want to have a quick follow-up question for your rankings for Joe Burrow. If, you know, he misses the rest of the season and going into next year, there's that, you know how the wrist thing kind of lingered another year? They just didn't felt like they weren't excited. So maybe the toe, how is it going to be? He's going to be 29. We just talked about how his age. Is there a world where you see Burrow fall below May and Mahomes and Hurts? You know, could he fall back towards the top 10?
Yeah, I think so, because he did after the wrist injury and all that stuff, too. Like, I moved him down, you know, quite a few. I know what he can do when he does play, so I don't want to, like, take that away from him, especially if somebody's doing this as a new dynasty startup and, You know, I bet if we did a dynasty startup right now, Hurts and May, Mahomes are going to go ahead of Burrow just because he's not going to play the rest of the year for sure. Yeah. But I still want, you know, if somebody's looking at my rankings, I want to be like, okay, I still want to value Burrow pretty high. I just have to take my team in a different direction to where, okay, I'm not, if I take Burrow, I'm not competing for the rest of this season. I'm going to kind of tank a little bit for the rest of the season. But then next year, I'm ready to go when I have Joe Burrow and whoever else you draft. So that's kind of where I have with Burrow. Like I said, I've done that before with him. And then on your Drake May part, like the one thing about him is he's elevating all the players on his team. Like he doesn't have anybody elite on his team. Like Stephon Diggs, I wouldn't call him elite anymore. He's still a really good receiver. But yeah. I wouldn't say Kayshon Boutte or DeMario Douglas or Hunter Henry are elite or anything like that. They're solid NFL, you know, veteran players. And he's elevating them and making them better than what they are, in my opinion. So there's a lot of quarterbacks that can't do that. And two of them we'll talk about here in a little bit, like Kyler, Trevor Lawrence. When have they ever elevated anybody? Kyler maybe a little bit early on with Hopkins, but that's about it. Like, yeah. Those guys can't elevate to make the players around them better. Drake May is doing it already in his, I mean, this is probably his first full season now. He's probably played close to 16 or 17 games started now, I would imagine, or pretty close to it. And he's already elevating his teammates and stuff. So, yeah, I think Drake May is only going to get better and better and better as we go here.
Yeah, Drake May, 20 starts into his professional career. But last year, 15 touchdowns in 13 games. He's at 12 right now through 7.
Yeah.
The schedule's easy. So for this season's purposes, May's all locked in, loaded. He's ready to go. It's funny. Going into the year, we would have said if you selected May over Burrow, you're looking for the future. And now here we are, halfway through the regular season. Now we're saying if you do a dynasty startup today, you're taking May for the now and Burrow for the future. It's completely right. Flip-flopped on its head. But I think, the Drake May, his abilities in fantasy, like his potential go nuclear in fantasy is going to remain because I would imagine the offensive line and his weapons improve over the course of the next 3 years. I mean, already talking about, should the Patriots use a first-round pick on one of these receivers coming out of Mekhi Lemon, Jordan Tyson? There's weapons. There's people out there, in the draft or free agency or whatever. And like you mentioned, he's shown the ability to, kind of elevate his teammates. So that's huge. That's awesome when we're trying to, build a team around a quarterback that we can depend on, not just week to week, but year to year.
Yeah, I think a lot of these quarterbacks that are doing really, really good this year, Daniel Jones, Bo Nix lately, Josh Allen for sure. Lamar's offensive line's been beat up, but the offensive line is key. Like, if I'm the Patriots, like I don't think their offensive line is like top 10 in the league or anything like that. There's still a lot of improvement they can have on the offensive line. So I would maybe if they're probably going to be picking towards the end of the draft in the 20s somewhere, probably a playoff team this year. Can they get a offensive tackle or offensive guard, center, whatever it is, down there to kind of help elevate Drake May there? Not necessarily a wide receiver or a tight end, just because I've seen him already do it with these wide receivers and tight ends that he has that, they're not the greatest, but he makes them better than what they are. I think as long as we keep that offensive line really, really structured and good in front of him, like he should continue to just do this. And then you can maybe get a second round receiver, third round receiver, and he elevates them to even better right. than what they probably are too. So, just team building wise, like, yeah, I'm always about keeping the offensive line in front of these guys. Like, there's a couple rare instances where it has worked out. Like, I think the big one is Chase and Penei Sewell. Like, it worked out for both teams. Like, Joe Burrow got his guy, Ja'Marr Chase, and it's been fantastic. Would I rather have probably see Penei Sewell there right now? Probably, but I'm not going to argue with how Chase and Burrow have been. Like, he's been fantastic, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the offensive line's a huge thing. I would say the next one I want to talk about is Jackson Dart. So I have him quarterback 13. I've moved him, probably one of my biggest movers up since the beginning of the season. And he just continues to get better and better. Now, last week, a lot of it had to do with, you know, the defense giving up 33 points in one quarter to lose that game. Like, there's no reason they should have lost that game last week at all. And it's not all Jackson Dart's fault or anything like that. He played pretty damn good. But, man, he just going into Denver, they were up, what, 20 to nothing at one point against one, the best defense in the league that a lot of people think. And he smoked the Philadelphia Eagles on Thursday night a couple weeks ago without Jalen Carter. Like, he just obliterated them. And man, Jackson Dart has been so freaking impressive.
Yeah, Dart, and he's been good for the team. Obviously, he's been. I can't help but get sad.
He don't have any
time.
Receivers to throw to.
That's what I'm saying. It makes me sad thinking about what he would have done with Malik Nabers. He would have just peppered Malik, made plays with Malik Nabers. Malik would have gone nuclear with the guy like Jackson Dart, and how he's been able to get this offense going. But I just love what he's done for us in fantasy, you know, kind of selfishly, because the rushing's been there. He's finding the end zone with the legs, and he is allowing, you know, the fantasy world to rely on guys like Cam Scadabo and Wandell Robinson. So he's able to maintain players with him. He's not just doing it himself, but, you know, the rushing's there for us in fantasy, and he's getting guys like Wandell the ball. I mean, Theo Johnson's come correct. I know he got
Daniel
lucky last
Bellinger
week.
Bellinger came out of
Bellinger,
the grave.
So, I mean, if one of those guys, you know, can we see two pass catchers relevant on a weekly basis? I think so. Cam Scadabo's been great in working with a guy like Jackson Dart, getting this offense going. So it feels like Dart is... he's going to be one of those guys. He's going to have a meteoric rise. When we're in the summer doing dynasty startups, this is a world where Dart is getting drafted over guys like Mayfield, Knicks, maybe even like Caleb Williams at that point. We'll see how the rest of the year pans out. But Dart's been great early on. In the, you know, the kind of looking ahead thing, you know, you can't completely say it. Still plenty of football to be played, but if the Giants still stink, that means he's going to get good teammates in the draft again. They're going to have a favorable schedule again. So 2026 might look as good for us as it has so far in 2025.
Yeah, and then another big one, too, is, like, I have Dart above Cam Ward now. You know, we didn't have that going into the draft at all. So Dart's already leapfrogged Cam Ward by a couple spots for me. But it doesn't mean I'm down on Cam Ward, because that was the next guy I wanted to talk about anyways. You know, somebody put a tweet out there the other day about, you know, hey, look at Drake May's first 6-7 starts last year, whatever. Like, he was making all kinds of mistakes and all that stuff. And now look at Drake May. He's the toast of the NFL. Like, Cam Ward, I think, has the ability to do that. He's played better the last couple weeks. You know, he didn't have Ridley last week. He still threw for, what, 250 on his stats against the Patriots last week were pretty solid, considering, like, they just didn't win the game. I mean, that whole team's just in shambles, but Cam Ward is their future for sure. But they got to get multiple different kinds of weapons for him, because I just think – I don't think Calvin Ridley's a number one wide receiver in the league anymore. He's not. I think Chigakonkwo and Gunnar Helm are – solid tight ends. Like, I think you can live with those guys. You know, Amonor, Chimere Adike, they've made some plays the last couple weeks and throughout the season. I don't think those guys are ever going to be number twos. They're probably solid number, like, three type receivers. You know, Amonor can maybe get to number two, but he needs somebody opposite of him that's taking a lot of the attention and stuff. So the Titans, they need offensive line help too. Like, you know, J.C. Latham hasn't been very good.
And yeah, they have two first-rounders in their offensive line, and they still suck.
Yeah, I mean, Skoronski's been solid, but the rest of the offensive line just hasn't been very good. Like, and J.C. Latham, you know, I talked about this in a Discord chat the other day. Like, I'm kind of done taking Alabama tackles. Like, you take a look at J.C. Latham, Jedrick Wills, Alex Leatherwood, Jonah Williams, and there's Evan Neal. Like, that's five tackles, like, in a row now that have been complete dog shit from Alabama. So, like, I'm good on Alabama tackles. So, Caden Proctor, no thanks. I'll pass on that one. But, like, their centers and guards have been okay. Like, Is it Creed Humphrey? Or no, that was Oklahoma. Landon Dickerson from the Eagles.
Yeah,
he's been solid. So yeah, there's been a couple of like the guards and centers that have been okay, but like, yeah, their tackle play has been bad. But yeah, the Titans, they need to draft offensive line or wide receivers. So it's gonna be for them, you know, can I get the really good offensive lineman in the top five? And then I can get a wide receiver there at the top of round two. That's probably the route I go if I'm the Titans, because you're probably going to get a better offensive lineman player at five or three or whatever they're picking compared to a wide receiver there. So, it just depends on how these teams, you know, these organizations, how they build their teams and if they make improvements and stuff. So hopefully that for Cam Ward. Are you kind of down on Cam Ward at all? Do you agree with Dart over him, or where do you see Cam Ward so far?
I definitely agree with Dart over him. But, I mean, you could have made that argument even in rookie draft season. I know, obviously, Cam Ward was going a lot higher because of the draft capital, but skill-wise, I mean, prospect-wise, I wasn't too that far off, so I'm okay making that switch. I'm not down on Ward because I think the physical ability is there, and you mentioned the Drake May. Things you could come into just catastrophic situations that just hurt that year one, but also Drake May showing that you can get better in year two. What they need as much as anything is they need a receiver that makes it easy on quarterbacks. Really just not that guy. And the Patriots have done that because they went to the well. If you look throughout kind of his career, Stephon Diggs has been a very QB-friendly wide receiver. He helped, you know, in the development of Josh Allen. He fit right in with C.J. Stroud. And, of course, you know, there was a slew of iffy quarterbacks when he was in Minnesota. And he's been able to, with that separation, help quarterbacks. He's doing it with Drake May now. Even with the volume not being what it used to be, those receivers help quarterbacks develop. They make things just a little bit easier, which can help a guy like Cam Ward tremendously. Because right now he's trying to complete passes to the guys who just can't separate. These are guys who didn't separate in college. You know, A.O. Manor has been a jump ball guy, you know, like you said, a great number three archetype. But to, you know, ask him to separate, make things easier on Ward is not going to happen. So I'm not out on Cam Ward at all. And I think, you know, this time next year, we could be talking about how Cam Ward was the big steal of Dynasty Startups as your QB2 or QB3. Based on the discount you're going to get with a poor rookie year. So I'm not out on Ward. There's plenty of factors that will change, that will help a guy like Ward, head coach, offensive coordinator, weapons, all of that is in line, you know, throughout the rest of 2025 and the beginning of 2026. So I'm not out at all. And, of course, when the discount comes, I'm willing to buy the dip.
Okay. Let's talk about some, like, the quarterbacks that I'm just down on. And I mentioned two of them earlier, like, I think I'm just out on Kyler Murray. I'm out on Trevor Lawrence. Bryce Young, I'm starting to kind of get there, but he's been up and down so far this year. Not as good as I thought he was going to be. Obviously, like the Geno Smiths, Tua, Justin Fields, we're completely down on those guys. But mm-hmm. Kyler and Lawrence are the two main ones for me that people probably still like a little bit. But I haven't seen shit from them in years. Like, do you kind of feel the same as I do? Do you think, I mean, I think Arizona needs to move on from Kyler. I think Jacksonville's got to be getting to that point where, I mean, I know they're 4-2 or whatever, but they just got fucking smashed by the Rams, and it wasn't even close.
And they get smashed by teams that are better. They got smashed by the Seahawks the week before. The better teams do beat up on
like,
the Jags.
I want to see them against the Colts, and like it might be another 35-7 game.
Yeah, or a rematch against the Chiefs. The Chiefs would dog walk them if they played again.
Yeah, for sure. I'm out. I'm just kind of out on Kyler, Trevor Lawrence. I think another one, where are you at with C.J. Stroud? I mean, I think he's super talented. I think the offensive line is just hindering him, and obviously a lot of the injuries and stuff too to the playmakers and stuff isn't good. But you know, 2 years ago we had C.J. Stroud was up in this Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert range that we had, and we were I remember people taking him number one overall in dynasty leagues over Mahomes and Allen, Lamar, and all those guys. But what are your thoughts on Stroud too, and Kyler and Lawrence?
So I'm out on Kyler and Trevor Lawrence. These are the quarterbacks I'm totally okay trading right now for the Daniel Joneses, for the Sam Darnolds, for the Matthew Staffords, for the short-term point improvements, because like you said, these teams have been losing atmosphere since they've been around. They're doing nothing to help. And these cap engineers, they're getting more and more creative how they can figure out how to get rid of this money, or they could just straight up say, I don't give a fuck, like Sean Payton did with Russell Wilson. So they can get off the quarterback money. They've done it before, and they could do it again. So I'm okay moving on from them in Dynasty for the older guys, the long, you know, shorter shelf life, but better improvements. The one I am holding on to is CJ Stroud. It's kind of a nuanced answer because I'm looking to get Stroud as like a throw-in. You know, if I'm selling one of my quarterbacks and, you've really just centered the quarterback for picks or players, and you kind of can, well, what if I add this running back and I get Stroud too? But I am out on trying to win with Stroud, if that makes sense, in Dynasty. Yeah. So if I fancy myself a contender, even as a QB2, I'm not. You got to make better arrangements than that. But in terms of the dynasty, the value, the market kind of holding some shares, I'm going to try to do it, because when we look at the dynasty ranks, a few things do pop out, and one more, as much as any, is seeing Baker Mayfield at QB11. He was left for dead. These talented quarterbacks can have resurgences with, can earn these rise in ranks if they go to a different situation. And I could see that happening for a guy like Stroud, that, he gets forgotten about. This doesn't get any better in the next couple of years. The Texans move on. He lands with McVay as the Stafford replacement. Who the hell knows? And all of a sudden, this guy will be back as a top 8 dynasty quarterback. So those talented players, you got to let it really ride out. And be for sure, because I don't know if it's Stroud. He still does things on a football field that I go, that's special. That should be better. But there's just it's not weapons. The weapons are there, but the offensive line, I think also, too, DeMeco Ryan's kind of bit off more than he can chew, gained confidence with the front office that first year. But I don't know if he's a good head coach. It feels like that Texans has been a clown show now for going on a year and a half. So it doesn't look any better. So there could be better days for Stroud. So I'm not out on him in Dynasty in terms of rostering, but if you're trying to win and you need to start him, that in that capacity, I'm out.
You mentioned like Daniel Jones and Sam Darnold too. I have them right now at like 24 and 25. But those guys, if they just keep playing this way the rest of the year, I can comfortably move them up probably to the top 20. So I think Jones and Darnold they've moved up in my ranks since the beginning of the year for sure, and they can just continue to move up and up. Daniel Jones is just on the one-year deal. The way that he's playing and everything's gone, there's just no way he doesn't get a multi-year deal with the Colts, right?
They'd be crazy to move on.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even looking at the Vikings, we all agreed with,
if they had Darnold right now, holy shit.
And they the answer probably was they should have traded McCarthy for, maybe a first or a second in a player and signed Darnold. He's been awesome. So I think these teams are learning that even if you get lucky, quote unquote, you just got to hold on to it, because the quarterback situation is the most important position in all sports for a reason. So you got to make sure that you hold on to the guys that are performing in your system. Steichen can thank Daniel Jones for saving his job. Chris Ballard can thank both of them for saving his job. This is a thing that they, would hopefully extend going over the next few years.
I think Daniel Jones is obviously playing really good. I think a lot of it has to do with Steichen and the way that he's calling plays and they're scheming up. Like I said, I watched that video, and they're scheming up some really good things there for the Colts right now. So, I mean, Steichen, was 2 years ago, his first year there, they were really good too. Mm-hmm. With the quarterback situation and all that, like he was a really good play caller. So I want to give kudos to Shane Steichen as well. He's doing a really phenomenal job right now.
Yeah.
I have JJ McCarthy still kind of high, even though he hasn't played. He hasn't really had any success at all. Still have him pretty high because I think a lot of people in the fantasy community still value him very high. What are your kind of thoughts on McCarthy so far? Do you think I have him too high at 19?
I think the argument could be made that the Jones and Sam Darnold should move ahead of him. Jared Goff's, like those a little bit older but maybe more reliable quarterbacks, I think could potentially move ahead of him. But I don't think it's too far off from what you have it. We saw the greatness in one half. That's it. Yeah. Is that enough to stay excited? For me, I kind of am. I really liked what I saw in that second half of the Bears. I think in this offense, we see, you know, Carson Wentz be fantasy relevant. We've seen Sam Darnold get a, you know, big paycheck because of this offense. We've seen Daniel Jones get the building blocks to build on something in Indianapolis by being in this offense. So I don't, I'm not out on McCarthy, but it is getting a bit concerning that the injuries have piled up in a massive way. And because of the success of the offense and the team, it's kind of gone under the rug. We kind of, you know, we don't talk about how injury prone he appears in his first stint as an NFL quarterback, missing all these games. But the red flags are starting to get a bit loud. But again, in rankings at this point in the year, I'm not making a big shift. I think having him in your top 20 makes sense.
Okay. Let's see if there's any other ones I wanted to talk about. Like, I buried Tua. Like, I think,
yeah,
I think Miami completely cleans house. New coach, new GM, new. I heard about Tua's contract. I don't know if they should get off of it. I don't know if they can. Like, it's Deshaun Watson levels. Like, that. It's like almost like 100 something or 60 million, whatever the hell it was, like dead cap, like for Tua. Like, if they move on from him next year. So maybe he sticks around on the team as the backup next year and they bring in somebody else to play ahead of him. I think if they don't want to eat all that dead cap, then that's probably what the route they go. But yeah, there's a lot of dead cap if they cut Tua, but I just don't see Tua being the Miami Dolphins starting quarterback going forward. And I don't think a new coach coming in is like, oh yeah, I want to keep Tua. Let's roll with Tua. I don't think there's anybody that wants Tua.
No, I don't see this working out for Tua. I don't see a second stint. He seems more like a backup. And now because of the locker room things and the hot water he's going to be under, teams are not going to have confidence that he could be a leader that pushes a rookie. He's probably just going to be a leader that can just come in and take over if there is an injury. I don't see it becoming I think his days as a starter are over. And in Miami specifically, it's a tall task to ask a second head coach to inherit Tua. They made McDaniel inherit Tua. Asking a second coach to inherit Tua Tagovailoa is going to be, you know, hiring suicide. No one will want that job if Tua is a must.
Yeah, I agree. I think the must part is probably not going to happen, but I think there's a possibility he's at least on the team because of the dead cap money. But if I'm Tua, like, I'm seeing, can I go be the backup to the Rams? Can I go be the backup to the Vikings? And I bet he's probably thinking about that. Like, can I just go sit behind a McVay learning tree, Kevin O'Connell, Kyle Shanahan? Can I go to one of those teams and be the backup there for a year and then kind of reset after that and see if I can get a job somewhere? I think that's probably his best case scenario, but I just haven't seen anything since that first year of McDaniel running that offense to where, you know, Tua is that guy, you know. It's completely gone.
Yeah, and what's gone with it was the explosiveness of the receivers. Tyreek Hill's gotten older. Jalen Waddle is definitely not as explosive as he was in his first couple of years in the league. He's been banged up throughout the years. And it wasn't like he was dropping dimes. He was just getting the ball into ridiculous playmakers, and they were running up 80 yards. He looks good when Devon Achane catches a screen, takes it 60 yards of the house. But in terms of building an offense around his capabilities, it seems like those days are numbered.
Yep. All right, so let's go on to the running backs here. I think the running backs are pretty straightforward here. Top two tiers, I got Bijan, Gibbs. I still have Genty at three. I still really believe in the talent, but that offensive line, that whole offense is kind of crazy. I think it's, you know, I've heard some talk that maybe the Raiders clean house again, Pete Carroll and Chip Kelly gone after 1 year. I just don't see that happening. Like, Pete Carroll, you need to give him at least a year or 2 years, 3 years to build that culture and build that program. Like, he didn't turn it around in Seattle after just one season. So I think you got to give him, you know, another year for sure. Taylor, I have at four. He's been probably the best running back in the league with Bijan and McCaffrey so far this year. Saquon, I still have at five. I have Hampton at six, even despite the injury. I've seen enough from him so far that I'm like, okay, I'm all in on Hampton at six. I have Achan at seven. I could maybe move Quinshon, who I have at 8, above him. Like, Quinshon has been fantastic since he's come back from all of his stuff. He's just been smashing every week. And at 9, even with the ankle injury, I still got Bucky Irving there, and I thought he was playing really well, too, before the ankle injury. So that's my first two tiers, my top 9 for Dynasty running back so far.
Hampton's checked the boxes for me, too. And not only hit like the skill sets that he possesses, but the offense and how they use running backs. I mean, Vidal is in lineups right now. It just seems like it's very fantasy friendly. It's been, whether it was J.K. Dobbins, Najee Harris, or Quinshon, you know, Omarion Hampton. So when Hampton comes back, he's just going to be a smash mode. And he has the frame to be an NFL running back. And injuries happen, of course. It happened to Jonathan Taylor, but you could bounce back. Hence, you know, what Jonathan Taylor's done, and amongst others. So as a top 9 for me, I'm totally on board with it. And like I said, I've started to change my tune on these smaller running backs. You know, seeing a Bucky Irving get hurt would have sank him in my dynasty rankings, if, you know, just a couple of years ago. So keeping him up there, it seems as if when he returns, there's going to be a spot for him to kind of just pick up where he left off and just be an absolute smash in fantasy. And that offense too, it's super fantasy friendly, and there'll be targets galore, even if Rashad White keeps a role, because they're just they have to find plays, you know, to replace what they were projecting that we're going to go to Evans and Godwin. Obviously not in the exact same, you know, way schematically, but just in terms of moving the ball downfield, they're gonna have to find ways to get their playmakers the ball. And now when he comes back, no matter which way you dice it, he's their second best offensive weapon.
Yeah, I can't argue with any of these guys kind of. I mean, obviously they're in my rankings, but any of these guys kind of in the top 9. After that, you know, I have McCaffrey, you know, James Cook, Kyren Williams. Like, those guys are all right up here. Those guys have all been performing this year. I just have the younger guys a couple spots ahead, just because I don't know when the cliff's coming for McCaffrey. Like, they're using him till the real wheels fall off again. You know, Jacobs kind of does the same thing when he's out there. These guys keep performing, but we see Barkley's kind of struggling this year. Yeah, some of it has to do with the offensive line injuries. But he had so many carries and stuff last year too. Like, you know, maybe Barkley's slipping a little bit. Derrick Henry, obviously with the offensive line and injury issues for Baltimore, he's fallen down some of the ranks too, but I still believe in him. Travion Henderson, that's another one. I still have him pretty high. I have him at 14, but he definitely has not played like that. But do I have him too high? Do you still believe in Travion kind of going forward?
I don't think he's too high, like, in terms of the overall ranks. There are, you know, looking at it, and we'll talk about him as we get to this next tier.
I think I've dropped him a couple spots since preseason, but
yeah. I mean, I thought he was a dynasty top 12 running back. I drafted him as such. And he's been a massive disappointment. I think right there in the 14, 15, 16 range makes sense. But you could make the argument for Breece Hall, Scadabo to be higher, to be ranked better than Travion. Because I still see better days for them as well. Where Henderson, the question just has gotten so much cloudy. I don't know what he has to do. And up here in New England, they're talking about his pass pro, which I thought was a strength on film last year. It's completely gone down the toilet. And if it's stuff like that, it's that those are the little things that's going to keep him from getting confidence. But the talent is there. And again, if Ramondre gets hurt, they're not going to go to, you know, Terrell Jennings.
Right.
No, yeah. They're going to go to Henderson. So even if you just want to put him as a super high value handcuff, with the draft capital, with the talent, with the prospect profile, he's got to remain in your top 20 in Dynasty. Mm-hmm. So at that point, you're just splitting hairs in terms of, do you still have faith in Kenneth Walker? Do you think that, you know, does an injury happen to J.K. Dobbins that allows R.J. Harvey to be unlocked? You know, are we going to bet on the second halves of, you know, of a Travis Etienne or a Chase Brown? So you could parse it out, but I think inside the top 20 makes sense. And then, like we talked about earlier with, you know, the tiers at receiver, it's just kind of splitting hairs.
For sure. Cam Scadabo, I've moved him up to my third tier. Like, he's right up there with these rookie running backs that we drafted. Like, I moved him over Harvey, obviously over Caleb Johnson, Bashaal Tuten. You know, some of those guys were probably drafted before Cam Scadabo, but, you know, Scadabo is an absolutely fantastic since he's gotten in there. Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt I have over some of these guys. He's another one, obviously, who's risen quite a bit. Do you kind of believe in him as like the Commanders' starting running back of the future? Do you think Kroski Merritt is, a fantasy top 20 running back?
No, I don't. I think rest of season, but he hasn't really been all that electric as the number one. He had 1 week where he had a couple of big plays, and it might not be his fault. It could be the fact that the offense runs totally different with Mariota as opposed to Jane Daniels. I don't know. I don't know exactly, but I don't think he's a running back of the future. You look at the draft capital, you look at what he brings to that team, and we've seen it in fantasy where these guys that don't have the draft capital play well, still get replaced. James Robinson is my go-to example of this all day, every day. I mean, he had back-to-back seasons where he was a fantasy monster, was still replaced immediately. And he only got that second season because ETN got hurt. If he didn't get hurt, it would have been one and done for James Robinson. And a guy like Kroski Merritt, I don't think he's that much more talented than a guy like James Robinson. On the field, we're not seeing it as if he's a better running back than a guy like James Robinson in his rookie year. So I think you want to keep him inside, you want to keep him around running back 24, 25 in Dynasty because things, this is still just speculation. They don't have to replace him. There isn't someone that is concernably better that is coming back from an injury. They're not worrying about, he doesn't have a Caleb Johnson at the back end of the depth chart. There is no, stud running back coming back from injury because Eckler's in his 30s. He's probably going to be off the squad altogether next year. So I don't think you can sink him, past running back 25. But I don't think also we should be, trading for him as a pillar piece for our running back build because I don't know if he is going to be the running back one of this team next year.
Okay, I think that's very fair. Like, they could easily draft, what if they're the team at the end of the first day? Let's just take Jeremiah Love. And, okay, Kroski Merritt's to RB2 now. So that could easily happen. So, yeah, I could see that. I think if you could trade Kroski Merritt, he still has that, he still has a high value. Like, can you trade Kroski Merritt and go get Javonte Williams or DeAndre Swift? Like, you're probably getting better production this year, and you might be able to get a plus on top of it. So,
right.
I think that that's definitely a possibility that you can look at for sure, too. I've moved down, Derrick Henry I moved down, Chase Brown I moved down quite a bit. Just, he's been really disappointing this year. But I think a lot of that offensive line stuff again with, the Bengals offensive line is absolutely terrible and has been for years. Javonte, I moved him up a shit ton. He was in my, 50s, and obviously he's been tremendous. He looks like a different player than he looked in Denver the last couple years. So I have him up at RB24. Do you think that's pretty fair? Do you think he's probably the Cowboys running back that they should probably give a deal to again?
I think you might have him a little bit too low. I think in Dynasty, okay. I think if you were to, if I was looking to improve, I would move my RJ Harvey for Javonte. Javonte's only 25 years old. There's still another season or two in the tank. And the Cowboys, they're not the beacon of team building by any concerns, but when you look over the course of their history, especially recently draft-wise, they don't get over their skis. I mean, how many mocks did you see Ashton Jinty or Amarian Hampton or them spending big and trading for Derrick Henry or signing Derrick Henry? There's always they keep linking these expensive, high, big-time running backs going to the Cowboys, and they just stay in the pocket, draft offensive line, draft defense, and see what happens at running back. Why not give a guy like Javonte a two-year deal? Even at his going rate, you give him a $2 million pay increase, like, his market's not going to be robust. It's still going to be the Breece Hall market. It's still going to be these rookies. There's going to be a hierarchy of running back additions, and Javonte's not going to be at the top of that list. So why not stay on this team? He's going to be pretty cost-effective on a team that desperately needs to have cost-effective options, and he's been great. And again, Jaden Blue is not getting any opportunity to become the next guy. Jaden Blue is the one that you should sink in your dynasty rankings because, again, why wouldn't they go back to the well and take a fifth-round running back, take a sixth-round running back? Maybe Phil Maffa comes back next year and is a good, backup running back option. But for me, Javonte, the Cowboys, seems like a marriage that fits. And, we're looking at the age at 25 and it doesn't look that old in comparison to some of the other guys in your ranks around this area. I mean, Derrick Henry, 31. ETN, 26. Chuba Hubbard, who everyone after that 2-year deal saying, yeah, you know, he's a running back too, lock. No, mm-hmm. screw Rico Dowdle. No, and now he himself is 26 years old. So Javonte to me seems like someone that the contenders are buying right now because the sellers want to sell because they don't predict it year to year. But I think we could be sitting this having this conversation a year from now, Evie, and it's the same.
Yeah, it's the same.
You want Javonte.
Yeah, I agree. I think he could probably be somebody who moves up a little bit more in my ranks, you know, when I update him here throughout the season for sure. Let's talk about maybe some of the guys that have sunk a little bit compared to where we had them preseason. So I start with Caleb Johnson is probably the main one so far that has sunk quite a bit. I think it's kind of just you got to be patient on Caleb Johnson. I still believe in the talent and everything. I just think Jaylen Warren and Kenny Gainwell, they're NFL veterans, and they both have played better than Caleb Johnson has so far. But I think Caleb will get his time here at some point. I just don't know if it's going to be this year. Do you still believe in Caleb, or are you completely out? What are your feelings on him?
I believe in Caleb because I think that also the price has come so down where he's just a throw-in in deals. He's really just an afterthought. And maybe we should start coming. Maybe it was hard to predict, but Aaron Rodgers throughout his entire career has absolutely despised working with rookies, whether it be receivers, whether it be running backs. Remember, it took 4 injuries for Aaron Jones to really get a crack at it. I know he didn't really have draft capital, but Rodgers likes his vets. I mean, he typically gravitates towards the guys who have been there. And Caleb Johnson just, he wasn't fit to task early on to get above the Jaylen Warren. Now, the extension to Warren, again, doesn't really make me want to sink Caleb Johnson. And Gainwell is the exact type of back that we all should have been on because, of course, Aaron Rodgers uses a guy like Gainwell, a guy with experience, a guy who's been there, a guy that can kind of do it all, even though he doesn't do it all that well. But Caleb's young enough, 22 years old. He has the draft capital 3rd round where an injury to Jaylen Warren this year, we start go right to Gainwell, but later in the season, does Caleb Johnson put together enough practices where they give the rock to him in an injury situation? Or, he could be the running back one coming out next year. So there's enough that can change, and there's enough to be encouraged by in terms of the draft capital, the prospect profile, to not completely leave him off your dynasty ranks. But where you have him now ranked, you have what number here? Let me see if I can find it. Caleb, you have it at 29?
27.
I think that might be a little bit elevated, but we're really just playing semantics in terms of your team philosophy and where you're at, because I think at this point you would be more than happy to trade him for a Kamara, a Montgomery, Jaylen Warren, Tony Pollard, J.K. Dobbins in a contender. Yeah. And I think the opposite would probably be true. If you were not winning, you would trade Tony Pollard for Caleb Plus. So I think that it makes sense to have him in this tier. So again, picking hairs might be the true answer, but I'm not out on him overall in Dynasty. It's just tough to see a guy like this bouncing back in short order, but we've seen crazier things happen. He is talented.
Okay. Woody Marks I still have kind of high. Do you kind of see him as, can he be the starting running back of the Texans' future, or do you think he's kind of like the secondary piece? Maybe he's like their Tyrone Tracy this year, and then in the draft next year they get the guy that makes him what Tyrone Tracy is now.
I'm okay betting against that being the case for Marks. I'm okay betting him being their guy. When you have a situation like they had with Mixon where they not only traded but extended Mixon, they were expecting him to be around more than one season. This kind of letdown, you have to kind of hit the reset button at the position. It doesn't allow you to go out and be aggressive. And then when you factor in what they need on defense, what they need on offensive line, the jobs that are going to be on the line probably a year from now, because I don't know if they, move on from a DeMeco Ryans right now, but I think this time next year, if they're not firing, he's, his seat's a bit hot. So I don't think with all that on the line, you invest much in running back. Because even so, the Giants didn't invest much. They just hit on a dog. If Caleb Johnson fell to them at that spot, he's probably Tyrone Tracy's probably still around a lot more. It just took a dog like Cam Scadabo to impress from practice one to get the first shot, to just be unrelenting. And of course, you know, the clubhouse guy's all over social media. Like, that stuff isn't a main factor when we're making decisions, but you have to in Dynasty take it into account. Because this is all the, you know, the variables you can't really quantify making decisions for, you know, we have to make decisions based on the decisions that these NFL teams make. So I think they'd have to really hit, you know, get lucky to take a guy, you know, in day three, to have him push a guy like Woody Marks aside. Because also Woody Marks comes with way better draft capital than Tyrone Tracy. And it's...
only a round difference, but...
Wasn't Tracy a sixth round pick?
Fifth.
Oh, all right. I thought he was a sixth round pick. All right, my bad. But yeah, I mean, either way, day three. You know, we're talking about those later guys. So, but either way, I don't know if they, like I said, they'd have to get lucky, and he would have to kind of have a bad training camp and be put. I think he's here to stay, because when you watch that game on Monday night, I don't know why Nick Chubb is getting a single touch on this team. The offense looks so much better with Woody Marks, and he does look a lot like Mixon when you look at him on the field and how Mixon was successful for this team last year. So I like Woody Marks. I think Woody Marks is a sneaky buy in Dynasty. It's really tough to get him because contenders love him. People building for the future love him. You're really having to pay, I would say, top of the market for a guy like Marks right now, not overall market, but for a guy like Marks in that that price range. So I think where you have him ranked right now, it's totally fine. You have him inside your top, right there, right outside your top 30, inside your top 35. You could, again, push him ahead of the Caleb Johnsons, Vashel Tootins, but we're splitting hairs. I think he's fairly, ranked here. And there is still some helium. So if you're a believer in the talent, get in now, even if the price seems high, because I do think there's room for his value to go up.
Okay. Anybody in the running back ranks that you kind of want to talk about before we end up wrapping it up here?
So I want to go down to your tier seven, because there's a bunch of names in here that, they don't really have much value on the market now. But I mean, we could be having a conversation in a month and we could be talking completely different about Blake Corum, Ollie Gordon, Tyler Algier, DJ Giddens, Breshad Smith. Like, these guys, I think they're fairly ranked, because if you look above them, there's fantasy producers, guys who have done it, guys who are doing it, short-term guys. Like, there's guys with good draft capital that just aren't ready yet. So there's a fair number of people ahead of them for good reason. But just because they're ranked, around your running back 50, are you out on the Corums, the Gordons, the Algiers? Like, how do you feel about this tier? How would you kind of categorize these type of players?
I would kind of say these are the guys that are probably the injury away guys from being, a lot more relevant for sure. So that's kind of how I view these guys. Like, they're probably a lot of guys I still want a roster. Like, none of these guys are on any of my waiver wires. Like, the only one that maybe I've seen a couple, Jordan James, just cause he hasn't played at all. Like, he's been out there. Tank Bigsby got cut because he's was the third on the Eagles, but now he's starting to get the backup job over AJ Dillon. There's just a few of those guys in here, but yeah, these are kind of like my injury away guys that I really kind of believe in for sure. If they get the shot that a fair, they're the starter shots, like, they could do pretty good.
How do you use this in terms of the actual Dynasty game itself? Like, do you try to buy them aggressively and make them a target of a trade? Do you try to get them as throw-ins? Because I think there's a value gap in terms of how people rank these players and how they value them, depending on your league, depending on who you're playing with. Because in some leagues, a guy like Blake Corum, if you go asking for Blake Corum, they're just going to be like, I don't care. But I think we played enough leagues, though, that they'd be like, I don't really want to trade Corum for your fourth. I don't really want to trade Corum for what would be my tight end three. I don't care if he's had two good weeks. It's a tough market to navigate because they're not always highly regarded, but they also don't feel like guys are given away too often. I know, like I said, there's some, but not many. So, like, in Dynasty, in the game itself, how do you approach acquiring these guys in these tiers, where obviously you have them in the round running back 50, so you're not going to pay top dollar, you're not going to get it crazy, but how do you go about getting these type of guys that are an injury away from having a value boost?
So yeah, these guys are kind of like my guys that I value as a third round pick, or if the team doesn't have a third round pick, then this is like the type of player I would go for that I value as a third round pick. So that's kind of how I would go about it. Like if I'm, you know, somebody needs Andy Dalton this week or Tyrod Taylor, Mariota, like, and they don't have a third round pick and all they have is fourths. Like, I don't want to trade those guys for a fourth, but hey, why don't you send me back DJ Giddens, send me back Sean Tucker or Kyle Monogany or whatever it is, like for Andy Dalton, like that's fair to me. So that's kind of the way that I go about trying to acquire them or kind of use them as like the throw in piece a little bit. Yeah.
That's a good, I don't know if it's because of the, I don't know what it is, but recently the trade market for, you know, 2 week fill in quarterbacks have been ferocious. I can't even tell you the amount of Joe Flacco, Tyrod Taylor shares I've purchased for round threes and round fours. And I can't talk about how many times I've been offered it and turned it down for teams that don't need it, but that's a good way to really capitalize on a moment in time. I like that call.
Yeah, and like there's some likes I can't even give those guys away. Like I can't even give Tyrod Taylor or Wentz or whoever. Like I was offering last week Wentz for like a fourth and nobody would take it. Like it's just I think people don't realize like last week or 2 weeks ago was a great example. Like last week. Like, all right, nobody wanted to buy Joe Flacco from you for a third, but if you would have, Joe Flacco was probably in your starting lineup last week. In a best ball 100%, league.
Yes.
You know, Aaron Rodgers, definitely in your starting lineup last week. You know, we've seen, you know, these Mariota when he started was pretty solid. You know, we've just seen those types of guys that if you would have just bought them for the third or fourth round pick, they probably end up in your starting lineup there at some point. Like they probably just have one, you know, really good week, and that sometimes that's enough to get you the win for the week. I see so many teams that just don't like value that. Like, oh, you know, I'm going to keep that fourth round pick or I'm going to keep that third. Guys, the third and fourth round pick doesn't mean fucking shit. If you if you look at Coupa's warp charts on draft picks, like it starts at like the 202 or 203, like the rest of it goes to negative warp. Like as the lower you go. So like the just having that pick is a negative warp value comparatively. So especially in 2026 when I know this class isn't deep, like, and you don't want to give me a third for this guy, okay. Like I think I dealt a couple Flaccos for a fourth. That was before he went to the Bengals. Just knowing like, hey, maybe you got one more start here with Flacco before they turn it over to Gabriel or Sanders or whoever, but it's actually worked out for you if you would have did the trade. And now look at, you know, Flacco, he's going to be starting mostly the rest of the year and he's going to have some really good weeks. If you would have bought Flacco, like I'm regretting some of those trades where I just dumped them for a fourth. Now, like I just didn't see you're it right. coming. I don't think anybody saw that coming. Like where they were just going to trade him away, but it works out. Like if Tyrod Taylor is a starting quarterback the rest of the year for the Jets, like he's probably worth a third round pick. He's going to be in your lineup probably once or twice in the best ball season at some point this year, just based off his rushing. You know, if they get into a shootout game and he's hot that week, throwing it to Garrett Wilson and Mason Taylor and those guys, like he's probably worth it. Like the Bills secondary sucks. Like could Andy Dalton have a 300 yard game? Like they're in comeback mode because, you know, they've gotten beat up a little bit, but you know, Andy Dalton could have 300 yards and two or three touchdowns this weekend. Guess what? He's in your lineup. So those are the types of guys. Yeah. Like if you could trade one of those guys and get, you know, a running back like Algier back, Breshard Smith, you know, because they don't want to give up a third round pick or fourth round pick. Like, I think that's definitely worth it, especially for some of these guys that were lower too, if you like them.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's also just interesting to see over the course of the last few years. I mean, how many times have you or could you have gotten Sam Darnold, Danny Jones for third and fourths? And yeah. I mean, Matt right Jones. Now they're going for – I just sold Darnold for 2 seconds and two, you know, two more quarterbacks. They're shitty quarterbacks, but it is what it is. But you're able to cash in on some of these quarterbacks if you have the ability to stash.
Yeah, I mean, Spencer Rattler's been pretty solid this year. I'm sure he's been in a lineup or two this year for you if you had him. Mac Jones, if you held on to him, he's definitely been in your lineup once or twice. So there's definitely a lot of these best ball guys. Whatever it was, 3 years ago when Burrow was hurt, I had a team where I had Burrow and Daniel Jones both got hurt. I picked up, that was the year Flacco went crazy for the Browns. Browning was great. And Tommy DeVito came in for the Giants. I had, those were my three quarterbacks, and I finished second in the league when I was in first the whole time. Because I had these three quarterbacks that were basically waiver wire guys led my team the rest of the way. So you can definitely have some players like that on your team.
Mm-hmm.
So, but no, that I think we're going to cook it up there, finish up there with the quarterbacks and running backs. I'll have you back on next week, and we'll kind of dive deeper into the wide receivers and deeper into tight ends too, because it seems like tight ends is the last position I always do on these on these shows, but they get cut off because we go so long. So a little more excited to kind of dig into the tight ends a little bit deeper for next week.
Yeah, we'll pick up where we left off. Make sure we go through all four positions. But you know, rankings updates, they deserve deep dives, because you got to talk about the seventh tier, because we in Dynasty the value can fluctuate insane amounts, and you just got to make sure you just stay on your P's and Q's.
Yeah, and I might end up probably on Friday again updating these some more. So they'll be updated again on Friday with some, you know, whatever our new news is and stuff that's happened, and I'll update it that way. But yeah, let's go ahead. We'll do America's favorite game, and then we'll get you on out of here.
Yeah, baby.
So I happened to log into Netflix this morning to watch one of my shows, and I saw that they dropped the new Montreal Expos documentary on Netflix today.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask you, what's Maddie's favorite sports documentary series that he's watched?
Oh, that is a good one.
Yeah, I got a couple that come to mind. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Yeah.
Documentary, like a Hard Knocks, right? Qualify?
Yeah. You can count those. Yeah.
So my favorite reality show, it's been some time since it's been good, but I used to, the Ultimate Fighter, the OG episodes, you know, the first 7 to 10 seasons, that was my favorite reality. I used to love the Ultimate Fighter. It was so good. Hard Knocks is great, but I think straight documentary, like released long form documentary or big part documentary type thing, my favorite probably is, it's called The Bastards of Baseball, I want to say. It's about an Independence League team that was purchased in Portland, Oregon by Kurt Russell's dad. The Battered Bastards of Baseball. It's on Netflix. It's fantastic. It was an older version without the sparkle of Savannah Bananas, where the thought was, you know, you could buy a minor league team, have it compete in the system, but have it be these castaways, these characters, these guys from all over that never got a shot to play, and they ended up being pretty damn good, changed the whole way the minor league system was constructed and how it went about and how it became, again, a more of a, you know, crushed a little guy for the corporation that we know today is in professional baseball. But it's a fantastic documentary. Kurt Russell was on the team, you know, the actor was on the team, and his dad was the guy who ran the show, was the you know, the yellow tuxedo guy of his time, if you will. It's fantastic. I love that documentary. But man, there are so many good docs. If you get a good sports, I think they've overdone it a bit, but they still have the new ones come out. This Montreal Expos one looks fantastic. I love every single Red Sox season DVD that I've had. When that was a thing, I had every single one, watched them multiple times. Sports docs are awesome, and behind the scenes in general are sick. So I like all of that stuff. Like, I loved the WWE behind the scenes that dropped. I love that. I love seeing the effort and work that it takes to be a professional athlete, a professional wrestler, whatever. I love seeing the day-to-day, the behind the scenes. I love getting that curtain peeled back. And even nostalgia-wise, I mean, like, the Last Dance was absolutely sick. Dynasty was pretty good. This latest Cowboys documentary came out, was pretty damn good. It's awesome. It's the golden age of behind the scene shows, and but I highly recommend, if you got like an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes, The Battered Bastards of Baseball, awesome documentary.
Yeah. I would say you definitely named my two favorites. The Last Dance for sure was phenomenal.
So good. And especially, it came at the perfect time.
Yeah. Everyone's inside for COVID.
Yes.
But it was must-watch TV every week, like when that mm-hmm. stuff came out. And I'll still go back and throw it on and watch it, even though but it just brought back so many childhood memories of mm-hmm. watching the Bulls and all that. Like, I knew, you know, 90% of that stuff, but, like, it just badass to kind of see it and kind of see a lot of that behind-the-scenes stuff, like at the All-Star games and, you know, calling Larry Bird a bitch and all this kind of stuff. And like, just, you know, all that kind of stuff. And like the stuff with the security guards, like they're throwing quarters at the fucking wall. Yes. Who gets it closer? They win for money. Like, they just bet on everything. The Dynasty one, the Tom Brady one on ESPN. That one was phenomenal. That's probably one of my favorite football ones. Mm-hmm. I didn't mind the Apple TV Patriots one.
That one was okay.
Yeah, that one was okay. Obviously the F1 Drive to Survive is really, really good.
Golf one's good.
Full Swing is awesome. Like, I'm a casual golf fan, but that definitely gets me more involved in liking the guys and stuff for sure. So mm-hmm. they've done a good job. The NASCAR one that they've done on Netflix has been really good too. I'm definitely interested in this Expos one. I thought the Red Sox one they did on Netflix, whatever, a couple months ago. You thought it sucked? I thought it was okay.
But this is why it sucked, is because they followed dudes who suck.
Yeah.
Like, Tristan Cassis is a plug. Rafael Devers was clearly a cancer. They were following these guys that were not cool.
No, that's the Amazon one. I'm talking about the Netflix one where they did the 2004.
Oh, yeah. I'll watch all those all day long. That one was awesome.
Yeah.
I was talking about the Netflix behind the scenes one.
I thought that was Amazon. What was that?
No, it was Netflix. It was like a season.
I didn't watch that one.
That one sucked. The guy sucked.
Yeah, I'm talking about, like, sign me up for anything Red Sox and Kevin Millar. That dude's fucking entertaining as hell.
Yes.
You know, obviously Big Poppy I love. I love Pedro. Pedro was always a fucking dog. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, I'm like most fans, I hated the fucking Yankees. So I always kind of had the Red Sox as like my second favorite team there, just because everybody hated the Yankees and you know, them buying everybody. But yeah, I was really into the Red Sox those years when they were, you know, the early 2000s when they finally, you know, broke the curse and all that. Obviously, you know, being an Indians fan and Manny went there, I definitely followed mm-hmm. Manny and stuff too. So yeah, those ones were really good. Yeah, there's so many good, like, sports documentaries that are out there. So,
and the access, it's you know, these athletes are going to become younger and younger, obviously, as mm-hmm. that's literally how time works. So the next wave are going to care a little bit less about access and less and less and less. These kids are posting their entire lives on the internet from 10 years old now. So when those 10-year-olds are 22-year-old, you know, rookie quarterbacks and star wide receivers and ace pitchers, they're going to care less and less about the behind the scenes. It's going to become more and more available. They're going to do it themselves. I mean, you could go on any team's YouTube and they have their own Hard Knocks. Yeah. Players have their own behind the scenes. The access is getting more and more. And at this point, in my opinion, I don't think it's oversaturated, because if I stumble upon it, I like it. Like, this past year, I started, I don't even know how it happened, it was just on my YouTube feed, started following some of the guys in the Mr. Olympia, the guys preparing for the bodybuilding competitions. It's like, oh, there's some nuance to this that I didn't know about and I didn't understand. I just, you know, you don't know about it. Once you learn about it, you're like, oh, shit. It's kind of interesting, and you start going. The access, you know, for professional athletes in the server, you know, pretty soon we're going to have what goes into the Super Bowl behind the scenes, and that's going to be fantastic, because you're going to see all these executives with, you know, the networks and the musical acts and all. There's just so much crazy shit that happens behind the scenes, and then we're getting more and more access. I love it, but. You also the thing about time, EV, is we keep getting older. So the swings for nostalgia will always be there. We'll always have, you know, a soft spot for X, Y, and Z, depending on your favorite teams, favorite players that they continuously. Oh, you know, when I was 12, if you would have said one day there's going to be a documentary on the Expos, I would say, I don't give a shit. The Expos, who cares about the Expos? But then I bet you we're going to watch this and we're going to hear about all these things. You go, oh my God. I didn't know this, and it's going to be, getting to see Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in his early seasons mashing the baseball. It's going to be, yes, Randy Johnson was there. It's going to be like, oh, shit, and I'm going to love this doc. So one day they'll do another one about this team and that team, and I'll watch them all. I honestly cannot get enough. In my older age, I've gotten rid of movies. I don't watch movies, like, at all. I hardly watch television shows. Only the must-sees or the ones I can binge on two nights. I just don't got it in me. But the sports docs, I'll always find a way to watch my sports docs.
Yeah, there's I think you brought up a huge point that I didn't even kind of think about, but the YouTube documentary series that these teams do are phenomenal. Like there's like especially during the offseason, I don't get time to watch them during the season, which sucks because that's probably a lot of good content too. But like the draft ones for sure, mm-hmm. like all the teams that do like behind the scenes of the draft, like yep. the Lions do a phenomenal one, the Colts used to do a really good one.
The Cardinals do a good one.
Yeah, Cardinals. The like Vikings there's a bunch of those. Yeah. Any of those ones, like they're talking trades and stuff. And you find out little bits of information about the Jets always have a really good one too. Mm-hmm. There's so many good ones on YouTube as well. So that's a great point. Like it's just not on your Netflix or your Amazon Prime. It's on YouTube too for free that you can watch. Mm-hmm. Like WrestleMania, they did the behind WrestleMania one from last yep. year or couple months ago, they put out the behind the scenes of WrestleMania 9 when they did Vegas mm-hmm. For the first time in the parking lot of Caesars. So, yeah, there's all kinds of different ones that are pretty cool. So,
yeah, and the Vince McMahon one. I know yeah, the point definitely. Of the documentary was not why I liked the documentary because obviously there's a shady side, a dark side to him and the system and all that stuff. So that wasn't, but I do go back and watch the first couple episodes to watch the history of wrestling. And when they go into the Attitude Era, go into the Acquisition Era, go into the Ruthless Aggression Era, you get to be reminded of these things too. And if you love something now, there's probably a documentary about how it was made, how it came about, how it evolved. And it's probably honestly a great watch.
Yeah, for sure. There's tons of them out there. So, but no, appreciate you jumping on this with me, Matty, this week. We'll be back next week to go over the wide receivers and tight ends. So appreciate you jumping on this, man.
Yeah, brother, anytime. I can't wait to get into the next two positions next week.
Yeah, for sure. So you can follow me at Eric Vanek NFL. You can follow him at Matty Kiwoom. Me and Matty will be back on Thursday night for you. So if you're listening to this on Thursday morning, tonight we will be doing the live walkthrough show on YouTube where it comes out on the podcast feed the next morning where me and Matty go through all of the matchups for the week. It'll be a little less this week with six teams on bye mm-hmm. when there was two last week. Thanks, Roger. Couldn't fucking fix that.
4-4, Rog. 4-4.
Yeah, just four every week and, you know, we'll be fine. But whatever. So, yeah, me and Matty will be on that. That starts at 7 Eastern. So come join us live. If you got any questions live, we'll answer them live for you, too, as we preview the week. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, sir.
So at Eric Vanek NFL, at Matty Kiwoom, we'll be back next week for episode 117. We'll see you guys later.